Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're back to do a season three wrap-up. Aaron, I think that means a lot of feedback and a lot of discussion of an episode that feels like a world away at this point. I've seen so much Westworld. I've thought so much about Westworld. My brain is full of Westworld, but we're back one last time to Ron Moore's 2003, I guess now, Earth.
Yeah, it's even my head's full of Fire and Blood, House of the Dragon stuff. I did a bunch of cramming this weekend for that new show, but we do want to say goodbye to For All Mankind in style. Say bye, Bob, to everybody. I want to start off with an interview from TV Line where they sat down. You'll recall that Ron Moore was kind of taking a step back from For All Mankind because he's got a new Disney deal that he's working on, and he says he's still going to be intimately involved, but ultimately the showrunning day-to-day stuff has been handed off to two gentlemen, Ben Nadevi and Matt Wolpert. And they say that season four, first of all, it got renewed by Apple. We already got a new season, and they're going to continue to focus on the Red Planet. I know there was some speculation that we had about, like, ooh, we are going to do asteroid mining. We're going to go to the moons of Jupiter. They say no. They say, in picking up the 2000s, I think we're still not done with Mars yet, to be honest, according to Nadevi. We just started exploring what's possible on Mars this season. We didn't even get there till halfway through. So we intend on kind of building on Mars and seeing a growing colony up there and what's possible, which seems to me like a season one to season two For All Mankind, you know, where, like, the moon base, but now what's the moon base going to look like after a few years? It's the same thing with Mars.
Oh, yeah. They felt like they dipped their toe into Mars this season.
Yeah. They also said that they're going to focus on things back on Earth, of course. Wolpert confirms that NASA's former director, Margot Madison, who's living in an FBI or who's facing an FBI investigation for leaking information to the Russians, left the Space Center before it was bombed by Jimmy's conspiracy theory buddies. She's then presumably transported to her new home for protection by the very people who had blackmailed her. And he says one of the new frontiers for season four is Russia and taking a peek behind the Iron Curtain in a way that I don't think we've seen or been able to do so far in the show.
Okay.
The DV previews. We're very excited about being able to tell the story a little bit through Margo, which we've said this season. So the Russian perspective, we don't get a lot of POV, and we're still not going to get a truly Russian perspective, but Margo being there probably, you know, involved with the space program, bashing her head against the different types of bureaucracy and political struggles than we have here in America, I think is going to be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They also say
we'll
that
see any more of Sergei's adjustment to American life, or is that just kind of he made?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think that the Russians will or the Americans will put him somewhere at the Molly Cobb Space Center? Like, will he be involved in the space program over here?
What they would literally he have will to flip offer? Like, they couldn't build an engine. Like, their space program is our space program. So, no.
Yeah. that's a funny way to look at it. I don't know. But, like, if he had more resources, more resources thrown at him, he might. I don't think he's dumb. I just don't think, Russia had as many resources to throw at the problems as NASA did. Sure. They're also keeping it coy about whether Margo's colleagues and friends back in America assume she died in the Johnson Space Center explosion. They say Wolpert teases that that's something we'll just have to wait and see in season four. So
I assumed that they assumed that. Why wouldn't they assume that?
Well, the question is Russia going to try to hide Margo, which implies that she will not have any kind of visible part of the space program. She won't certainly be their, there's no way she's going to be their administrator or anything like that.
Gotcha.
A Sergei living openly as an American, or is he like a got a defector kind of witness protection program type of life?
Oh man, if I'm Sergei, I'm asking for the witness protection program. You kidding me with the KGB?
Yeah,
they're vindictive and they are crafty. So
sure. Okay, well, that's all the show notes that I want to talk about. Let's move on to the people's feedback. We got MA from NYC saying nothing is introduced in this show without later being used. It's something I admire about the show. They continue, for example, we see Ed teaching his son how to ride a bike and Sean later getting killed on the bike. Sean's terrified of letting Ed down and apparently defied his mom because he's afraid of letting down the team, as his dad had drilled into him. And we have the question of who is the leader and follower between Danny and Sean, and then Danny's later revelations to Ed. They also say, you keep saying that Gordo got back into fighting shape by solely through plain hard work. You forget that Gordo actually saw a therapist and got treatment. He admitted he had a problem, where Danny does not. Gordo was a hard-partying drinker, but maybe not an alcoholic, whereas Danny had crossed the line and become a cross-addicted addict. Danny was into drugs before the pool incident. He was selling off the wedding gifts that his wife asked him about to pay for them. I forgot about that. There's like a throwaway thing where Amber is asking Danny where such and such thing we got. And he's like, oh, and I never put the two and two together that he was selling those things to pay for a drug habit that he'd already picked up.
I did not either.
Okay. I'm not going to co-sign this, but it makes a lot of sense. And that's a good catch if so. Mm-hmm. And I don't. So I have to go back and rewatch season two, but I don't think they did a very good job of showing Gordo's therapeutic process. He might have seen a therapist, but to me, the story they tell is of him white knuckling things. He was just essentially exposure therapying himself without any kind of like medical oversight. He's locked himself in a closet in a spacesuit. He's forcing himself to for hours at a time to kind of like, you know, get himself, which is, I think, a way to go about it. But like,
but that's also a way to accidentally commit suicide. I guess I'm with you. I didn't see that so much as like approved therapy, more him taking matters into his own hands.
Yeah. And Ed just pushing the gas. We just got to get you up on a plane. We got to get you to do this. We got to get you to that. Yeah. I don't think that was under the care of a therapist, but I could be wrong. I just didn't think they were telling that story. Finally, they say, I predict Kelly will find a questionable organism in their water samples using non-accepted methods. There may be questions where the organisms came from, contamination from Earth or actual Martian life. This was sent before the final episode, and it does raise a question. I thought that there would be something to that, too, that they'd come back and Kelly would say definitively there's no life there or there was life. Of course, the thing is all destroyed now. Would that... to me, it seems like they're not going to tell the story of life on Mars, because that really does move this into science fiction.
It does. Yeah. And, you know, if they did find life, I have to say it wouldn't be like complex life, right? It'd be single cell organisms.
It's
like
gonna be macro.
Yeah. So nothing that would like fundamentally change the way we view the universe. Although finding life anywhere would kind of do that, but finding like little green men is I think what everybody thinks when they say,
right,
you know, finding aliens, right? Not amoeba.
If we find aliens on the show, I hope it's like the very last season, the very last scene, they're landing on Europa or, you know, one of those worlds where there might be life frozen in the water and like they find something there. But like, yeah, I just think that it changes the show as much.
And the Vulcans land. Sure.
It changes it so much that they need to, like, that's where you go out on, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, what does it say interesting about human society if we find, like, well, we got to find life before we pull it together? It's like, well, shit, that's not very forward thinking, I don't think.
And intelligent life fundamentally changes what the show is. Because not about humanity's struggle with itself. It's about humanity's struggle with an alien presence.
So thanks for that, MA. Let's move on to Nicholas. Says, as a Texas native, I can confirm that we here in Houston play plenty of cornhole. So it's not a Midwestern exclusive.
In the 90s? No, that's my question. The thing. I don't remember cornhole until like the 2000s for me.
I think late 90s for sure. Yeah, I guess we need confirmation about mid-90s
cornhole. Mid-90s Texas. Yep.
Also, I love seeing Shinerbach represented on screen and in space, but actually cheered when I saw Aleda and Bill analyzing Margo's treason over a six-pack of Lone Star, the national beer of Texas. Yeah. You know, it's funny because that makes the connection to Russ and Cole from True Detective even stronger.
Okay.
because Russ was an infamous Lone Star hound. He was like carving the cans and making the rain. He was doing the most with Lone Star in that show. By the way, if you're a Texan, if you're a Texan and haven't seen that, you ought to check it out because it's a Lone Star clinic. True Detective season one. What were we saying? I felt like I catch you off.
Oh, my brain is programmed to ignore all branding, apparently. I don't know. I did not remember it was Lone Star.
I'm the same way. Like a lot, especially on the internet, like I just don't see interstitial. Like something has to be fucking gross and taking over my screen before like I notice, you know? It's like billboards on the highway too. You just don't see them after a while. Michael from Beverly Hills, Michigan, where I think they keep the real hillbillies, said, Aaron, I listen to every podcast and every time you mention a potential North Korea being involved, I'd roll my eyes. When they look down and see the footprint on the regolith of Mars, I stand up and shouted out loud to my TV and wife, damn it, Aaron, I can't believe it. Just had to give you props for absolutely nailing that one early on. And again, we didn't nail shit. We just happened to be dismissive of a theory that we might have read on the podcast. What? I saw someone say that it would have been funnier if they walked up and seen the smiley face. And I gotta say, as what the fuck as it was to see all those footprints, seeing the smiley face would have been really crazy. Yeah. I kind of wish they had done that.
That would have kind of evoked the idea that there's like this face on Mars, right? Like doesn't everybody see like the shadows of rocks and think, oh, it's a face. There's life up there. Yeah, that would have been. Sure.
There's the pyramid. Cool. There's the face on Mars. Is there a smiley face crater that they reference in Watchmen? I think there is also. There's a lot of stuff that it turns out like I think it's cool because, man, I thought those Martian faces were fucking wild. The pyramids back when I was a kid in the 80s. And then we get a high resolution scanner and it's nothing. It's like the only reason they look like anything is because of the shitty resolution and our brains matching patterns. Matching. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if you want to give credit to someone, Michael from Beverly Hills, Michigan, give it to John C., who on July 3rd made a startling prediction about the North Korean landing. And he's here for his internet points. Is where can I spend them? Try Dave and Buster's. It's your best. See if the ticket machine will accept them. Because if not, you might be out of luck. Seriously though, I thought the newsreel in episode 4 was such an enormous narrative red flag. I was surprised you didn't agree some North Korean shenanigans were afoot. I never suspected a guy would still be alive, though. It seems ludicrous after the length of time that's passed on the show. I wonder if the DPRK didn't shout about it precisely because it was intended as a one-way trip and would make them look deeply inhumane in the eyes of the world. Yeah, I think they definitely talked about this in the finale. And I think that they did enough. Is like I do wonder what the game plan for getting them back was.
I really don't think there was one.
Well, it was a Soyuz mission. Then those things are designed, I think, to be able to redock in space. So was there? I wonder if there was a component that they left in orbit. They didn't go into it, and we might never know what the actual plan is. Although I would appreciate a beginning montage next season where they talk about this and how the relationship with North Korea has changed or not changed in the world since they were the first nation on Mars. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if next season they straighten it out for us. Arcade Shenanigan says, I got to say, this setup of leaving Danielle and the Soviet cosmonaut commander to be the ones that meet the North Korean in his flying closet is a great setup. The two people who wanted to claim first boots on Mars meeting the actual first boot on Mars. I also like that they started the season with Danny being a heroic badass. He's talking about Danny, not Danielle. I'd still be down for seeing him step up in the finale for nice character symmetry. Thanks for highlighting the show. I freaking love it. We didn't get that. What do you think the point was showing Danny dangling at the end of that rope? Now that we've seen the whole season.
Like specifically the dangling at the end of the rope?
Yeah.
I mean, I just thought it was his hero moment. Is there something more that I should be picking up?
Well, the thing is, it's like I keep on going back to like he didn't look heroic. And I put that recontextualized that with the, you know, confession he made to Ed and when they're buried underneath the Martian regolith. And this guy who, even when he saves his lives, a station full of lives, his new bride's life, doesn't really feel joy. He's just numb because this isn't the life he wanted to lead. It's the life that he thought someone like Sean would want to live at the age of 12.
I could see that. Yeah. Definitely wasn't picking that up at the time. Didn't have the context, but.
And I got to say, going forward, I don't hate Danny. Danny is a very tragic figure. I can never, like I said, you know, he did a lot. He got a lot of people killed. That's true. To me, he just is just a tragic figure that, you know, his parents weren't around. It sounds like him and his, you know, brother had some issues with that. And that came out in different ways. The acting out as children. Then it turns out that your best friend gets killed. And, you know, you've got a whole lot of guilt and shame from that. And the fact that you survived, the fact that you used to pin all your shit on him. And now you're trying to try to, like, be the son that they never had. And there's this weird relationship with Karen and she takes advantage of this poor guy never had a chance. It doesn't excuse all the shit that happens. But, like, I just have a.
Right.
I was coming in this season thinking he's like Joffrey from Game of Thrones. And I just I just can't. He's at worst a Theon Greyjoy.
No, it's amazing to me. And this is indicative of what type of storytelling I like. But if they had come out with a plot element that said, like, oh, actually, Danny was, you know, some kind of like artificially tampered with in the NASA program, super soldier, and his brain was all messed up and they were making him act like this, I think it was stupid. Or any number of other like plot reveals that would explain this. But character reveals, I love it. It getting more context into what's making a character act the way they are and think the way they do is always my favorite part of a television show. And it's why I like shows like Better Call Saul, for instance, because it's a lot of that. And so, yeah, when they did this with Danny, I was like, all right, I thought Danny was freaking annoying most of the season at best. But now I understand him so much better. I feel bad for him.
Yeah, and there's, you know, my favorite whipping boy, The Walking Dead, does this a lot where, like, they would give a speech like Danny gives to another character and the character's like, oh, you know, like Ed could fairly say, well, I never knew that. But the difference between a show like The Walking Dead and this is when Danny was saying these things, we were nodding our heads going along because it all tracked, right? We knew about the problem. We saw the meeting that Tracy and Karen had with the principals where they're talking about the boys. We knew that Sean, like, the show had laid all these cards face up on the table, and it's just like we didn't bother to, you know, and that knew the reveal was a thing that recontextualized. I just really admire that. And I don't know whether they planned for that at the beginning or they're just having human drama and they're just very good students of the past seasons. But being able to bring that stuff in and completely change how I feel about a character, I think is pretty top shelf, man.
Well, that's the difference of writing from a character perspective or writing from a plot perspective. And I feel like The Walking Dead writes from a plot perspective.
How to get from A solely. To B. And, yep.
Right. But when you say, okay, this character is who they are, what would they do in this situation? How would they react given everything that we as writers know about them, even if the audience isn't totally privy to it yet? It's just a fundamentally better way to write a human drama.
Let me ask you this. I meant to ask and I forgot to. We talked about Ron Moore, you know, taking a back seat maybe in favor of these new guys. Does that cause for worry? Because for better or worse, like, it, you know, Ron. Be. Yeah.
I think it's not always like necessary to worry about it because there are a lot of capable writers in Hollywood. And yes, Ron Moore, you know, created the show and has shepherded it so far. But if he shepherded it well enough, these people know what their task is, right? And they can bring a lot of the same elements that he brought to the show in future seasons.
Yeah, I mean, maybe people, I was one of those people who were worried when I heard that Vince Gilligan was stepping down and turning the things over to Peter Gould on Better Call Saul. But of course, I'm a bad person to talk about this, but I've heard that
think Better Call Saul is great. Yeah.
Turns out in the finale, what's your opinion on the finale? We'll turn into Better Call Saul.
I can't say yet because we haven't recorded that podcast.
Ah, yeah. I don't want to break news on this one, but
yeah.
Well, I'll put it this way. I did a poll on Bald Move because I saw our friend Joanna Robinson boldly declare it's better than Breaking Bad.
Fuck you.
And
we'll
I went
fight
on
her
and,
over this.
All right. Well, it's 64 36. Is those the numbers? So it's a solid okay. majority that thinks Breaking Bad's better, but it's closer than I thought. Like 34% yeah, yeah. people thinking that it's better than that was. So anyway, a testament to where you can change showrunners, even really well regarded. A highly regarded, I would say instrumental, like, you know, Vince was Breaking Bad without Vince Gilligan. It's not a show. And it doesn't have to be something we have to piss our pants over. So we'll see. We'll see.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Let's move on to Chris from DC. He says, no way would NASA let any astronauts go to Mars without contraception. At the very least, the women would be on the pill, probably an IUD, hell, maybe both. NASA's all about redundancy, double, triple, maybe even quadruple. They could give the men vasectomies and make them wear condoms as well. I just don't see how this would be missed on a mission as important as this.
I'm looking it up right now.
I don't think NASA can forcibly sterilize their astronauts, even if it's entirely reversible. I don't think that's the case. It's interesting because I at this point, there's no way people haven't fucked in space. No way. No way. No way.
The ISS is a platform made to fuck in.
It's a zero G fucktactory. I just there's no way, and I've never heard of anyone being pregnant in space. but like I don't know whether they voluntarily take pills or if they wear condoms, or like I know astronauts tend to be older anyway, so maybe this just isn't, you know, as pressing an issue. If I got, you know, if I'm a 45-year-old astronaut, I want to get snipped so I don't have to worry about it. That's one thing. But I don't know. Did you find anything out?
No, I'm looking it up here. There's a lot of talk about periods, but there's no talk about actually giving astronauts contraception.
Yeah, I remember there's a really funny interview that Sally Ride gave where like the NASA people were like, well, how many feminine napkins should we send up for a mission? 50? And she's like, the fuck? You know, like the fact that these guys could tell you how much delta V you need to get to a lunar injection orbit, but they have no fucking clue how a woman's body works. You know,
I mean, they need to know flow rates. They need like all that stuff is set in stone when you're talking about
pressure, absorption factor. You've got,
sure. Get in there with your calipers and figure it out. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like there has been a tradition, let's say, of like ISS astronauts going up there and taking contraception by default.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe I did say I think people have fucked in space, and I think that's absolutely true, but I also, there's an outside chance that there's enough professionalism within astronauts that they just all kind of agree that like, hey man, we don't wanna, we're on a, like a 180-day mission in the space station here, do we really want to fuck up the dynamic by having people like, maybe I don't know. I don't know whether they're jacking and jilling it into the waste receptacles or what the deal is, or they're just all turned into space eunuchs, space monks up there. But hasn't been a problem. I just don't think that NASA would like would forcibly sterilize their astronauts. So I disagree with that part of your feedback there, Chris. He also says, I know what they can do with the out of work oil drillers and coal miners here on Earth. Send them to space.
Mm-hmm.
Just move. The oil drillers can drill for water on Mars, and the coal miners can mine asteroids, maybe the moons of Mars to start. Seems like a logical progression and win points for Madam President.
There you
go. I don't know that sending a bunch of coal miners to work in the asteroid belt is quite the panacea that we think it is. I think their families might have some things to say about that.
Future generations.
Chris, if I go to criticism on your worldview, I'd say like you really gloss over the people problems. Just fucking snip the astronauts' balls, ship these miners off to the asteroid belt, and no problem. Win-win. Like,
I don't know. I've seen two competing pieces of documentary footage that would produce different outcomes. I've seen miners go to space, and generations from now, they're fighting wars that threaten the entire species.
Right?
I've also seen miners go to space, drillers go to space, and drill holes in asteroids that save the planet Earth. So,
yeah,
pick your poison, I guess.
God, I just watched Armageddon, like the last 15 minutes of it the other day. It was on the hotel room I was staying. It's so cheesy, though.
I love
it. As soon as Bruce Willis dies, and they have this like 5-minute montage of kids pushing soapbox derbies, looking like the looking like the space shuttle, wearing American flag capes, and
all those people.
Yeah, all these kids in Main Town America are flying around as space shuttles, and just everybody's in the space, and that's what happens. That's what happens when you send Bruce Willis to space. If NASA wants some more budget, they, you know, why the man's still around in some fashion, they need to get him in a helmet.
Yeah.
Alicia, speaking of human factors, says, can we talk about why Jimmy's wig is so bad?
Sure, we can. Is
it Yeah, I mean, they just, poor Jimmy was just made to look like a complete fucking loser. Like, he doesn't care about his appearance. He doesn't care about, like, he is just this weird 90s incel type of dude. And it's, I always think it sucks when they lean into that, but it is what it is. He was a giant fucking loser because that's the way his character was written to be.
I mean, you want to believe he can fall in with a guy like Timothy Vey. So,
right. And who also,
you can't have him in a 3-piece suit with a fresh haircut. I get it.
And that guy also no fashion mogul, the leader, you know, he was very much the Canadian tuxedo, unfortunate mullet, not using any product in the hair. I don't know. Something about once you start. I don't know. I guess there is a look about people who are heavily into conspiracy theories, you know?
You got the conspiracy theorist look.
Yeah, once you just start to drop out of human society and everything's just like lizard people all the way down, why the hell would you keep up with fashion, you know?
It's not a Maybelline haircut? Line, let's say, right? Like Revlon's not releasing conspiracy theorist line.
Yeah. Why go to a barbershop? Do you know what shit is in that blue fluid that they comb in your hair? It soaks into your brain, makes you more malleable. It's like, that's how they get the people to avoid the fluoride. You go to the barbershop.
Yep.
And
the scalp is the most absorbent part of the human body. Did you know that?
Well, it's the closest. It has the most surface area in direct proximity to the brain. That's just science.
True. Yep.
So... Entropy Bucket says, great coverage of season 3 For All Mankind. Well, thank you. I wanted to see what your thoughts were about season 4. I like to see the move away from space to seeing the repercussions about nuclear fusion. Paul Ehrlich, a chemotherapy pioneer in 1990s, once wrote that giving cheap, abundant energy to humanity would be like giving an idiot child a machine gun. We've seen this season that human politics is riven by petty concerns. You can just imagine fusion pouring fuel into that fire. They've hinted at that with protests and whatnot. Would like to see an Earth-focused season of 4. I find myself in violent disagreement with our viewership here, our listenership. This is For All Mankind, and space has got to be at least 50% of it, or it just turns into shitty Westworld, I think. Or not shitty Westworld, shitty West Wing.
I think what you're going to see is... tangentially, you'll see the effects of the abundant energy, right? I think like they haven't come out and in the show and done like half a season on how electric cars have advanced over gas powered cars, right? But it's been around in the background.
Sure,
I think you'll see it play out that way, and the main focus will be colonization of Mars, and then toward the end of the season, whatever comes after that.
What do you make of this Paul Ehrlich? I always tend to be skeptical when I see an expert step out of their lane to opine. Like, this guy knows a lot about chemotherapy. You know, he's probably a medical doctor, and he's talking about the societal impacts of fusion energy. And I'm like, you know, whenever I see a psychologist start talking about history, when I see a historian start talking about, it's like, boy, I don't know.
And so you want a former programmer, current podcaster's opinion on
television, the world. Right? It's crazy. It's stupid. Why would you listen to something like that?
Oh, I mean, right now you're asking me what my opinion on this guy's worldview is as a podcaster.
Oh, you're right. This is stupid. Let's just move on.
No. I think like, yeah, throw my opinion out because it doesn't fucking matter in the grand scheme of thing. But my opinion is this guy could very well be right. I think there are a lot of growing pains to come with a massive influx of free, cheap to free energy. I think, and you see the cracks in this season with the coal miners and all that stuff. There'd be some hurdles to overcome, but I think ultimately it'd be a very good and unifying and uplifting thing for humanity.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, I don't know this Ehrlich guy, but I wonder what his point was. Like, why did he opine that? Because it seems like it'd be like saying, boy, if man ever developed a polio vaccine, it'd be like giving a chimp a machine gun. Like, it seems wholly benevolent. Free energy so cheap it could be free. Like, is the argument that consumption would go crazy and it would destroy the Earth even faster?
And think about, you know, weapons that would be developed out of.
We already got that energy. That's the thing. It's like we've got fusion bombs since for like 70 years, and that's where it ended. We can blow the fuck out of shit, but we can't use it. We can't use it to power anything.
I don't know. Right. I mean, yeah. Ideally, you want to harness that.
If we didn't have fusion bombs, I'd agree. But
I don't know. We took our discovery of hugely abundant energy and funneled it into mostly weapons. What would we do with the next stage of that? I don't know. I think there is reasonable fear that you could have, but also the trade-off is so worth it.
There's also a lot of hope and optimism, honestly. Right. Like you could essentially that if you a world of fusion, cheap fusion power, you no longer have to worry about water. You can just desalinate as much as that shit as you want.
Right.
You no longer have to worry about
mine it.
dangerous, heavy radioactive waste on your reactors. You no longer have to worry about greenhouse gas emissions. You no longer have to worry about, you know, what happens if the sun is not out in the day or the wind's not blowing. You've got nuclear fusion as the backbone of your power delivery system.
And it's in a real way affects everyday lives of people, right? Like, economically, everyone would be so much better.
Yeah. I would like, but I to your point, Entropy Bucket, I would like to see them show more of those effects. They're always in the background. Like we saw in season two, the former NASA director who crashed on the plane talking about how he's got his electric car in the '80s. And then here in 95, we've essentially solved climate change already with the cheap, clean energy. So we're seeing it a little bit. It's just not, you know, but as the show goes further in the future, the things will diverge more and more. And like, I don't know, are we going to have like some kind of a borderline utopia in the 20s and 30s? But it's also like we've talked about on the show, it kind of hallmarks the foolishness. If you got this clean, cheap power, it's causing so many good things in the world. How the hell is it putting so many people out of work? How the hell can the government not have the resources to help those people? How can they not just be like sleeping out in tents and, you know, protesting NASA and shit? That's just failure to allocate funds. I mean,
yes, 100%. That's poor management.
No one should starve on this planet. No one should starve on this planet, but they do because failures of infrastructure and, you know, allocation of resources. So. Mm-hmm. Josh H. says, For All Mankind has done an interesting job introducing details into the story with parallels to events from actual history. As you guys pointed out last week, the NASA bombing seemed highly reminiscent of the real-life mid-90s Oklahoma City bombing. I actually had this thought earlier in the season during a brief scene of the newscast with the Twin Towers in the background. Next season, I wonder, do you think they should or need to do something that's a parallel to 9/11? On the one hand, it could be a distraction from the space race story. They've already had a big terrorist moment in the show, and they'd have to make an effort to do it in a tasteful way. On the other hand, it's unfortunately difficult to think of the actual 2000s without a 9/11 and all the after effects. Any thoughts on how they could integrate this into the story, or if they use it at all, could it just be a part of a time-lapse montage in the opening season of season 4?
Yeah, I think that's most likely what it's going to be. But it could they go the North Korea angle? Is that possible? Because like, they haven't even touched on religion, and, you know, American meddling is certainly like largely what that stuff was about, but it was also about religion. I don't think the show has even dipped its toe into religion. Has it?
Not really. You know, one thing they could do is make the 9/11 happen in Soviet Russia. You know, not for nothing, Soviets, like, in this timeline, did Soviets invade Afghanistan? I can't remember if any of the newsreels talked about that, because, I think were it not for the United States invasion and liberation of Kuwait in the 90s and their consistent military presence in the Middle East, I could easily see the Taliban and Al-Qaeda concentrating on the Soviet side of it, especially if the Soviets didn't actually disintegrate, you know, didn't the Warsaw Pact hadn't collapsed. I could see them doing a 9/11 in Moscow, which would be an interesting Kremlin? Yeah, which would be an interesting inversion of, like, you know, the world order.
I expect it won't be a central thrust of the next season, but we'll see.
The other thing is, it seems like this is going to really devalue the Middle East in general. If you have free fusion energy, you're not going to be as reliant on the oil and gas extraction over there.
Yeah,
which also weakens Russia a bit.
Plenty of strife.
So I don't know. Thanks for the comments, Josh. We'll move on to Jared C. Just a quick thought on what you guys talked about a bit in the final episode, next season. I am not so sure we will not see anything that happens on Mars with the current crew and jump straight to 2003. After all, we did not jump straight to Mars this season. I believe it took a couple episodes. There seemed to be a lot more open with this season finale, so I could see them taking a little time in season 4 to wrap up the current crew and the Mars mission. But wouldn't be surprised we don't either. I just think there's a chance, though.
I don't know, because they always jump to the year that they set up in the finale, right?
But they didn't. Remember, we thought we were laboring under that impression, but they were actually in 92, 93 at the beginning of the season, setting up for the 94 window, and they missed that and had to go 95.
And it was 95 in the...
They did, which was our first
sequence.
Okay. Which that and the single boots was our first clue that something was going on, because either they made a mistake or, you know, there weren't two sets of boots running down a ramp tackling each other.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay.
So now I still think it's very hard for me to believe that they're going to resume in 95 and then do a flash forward to maybe in the early 2000s. But I don't know, because like I said, that was the pattern coming in, and they went away from that to do a little bit of trickiness stuff with the North Koreans. I like that. I don't know. You might be right. And they could get away with it because like everyone's going to be the same age. There's age making up everybody in makeup anyway, so they could do that. Mm-hmm. I think it's more interesting to just yada yada through that with a montage and catch us up with what's going on and then show us. It doesn't have to be in 2003. But I want to get ahead and see the Mars base a little bit more established, I guess.
The one thing that I'm going to feel like we missed out on that is seeing this next year and a half, the hardship that's going to come from making the choice they made for Kelly. I do wish we could see a little bit of that. So if they do jump back to that, I'll be happy. But
it's a lot like Ellen relieving, she's a sole survivor of the relief mission and she relieves Ed. You know, like we didn't see her. So her lonely, mission on the moon. Because we've already seen something like that. We've seen Ed be alone and succumb to space madness and start an international. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like the show's kind of already done that.
Do it. Because he's a wild card here.
Danny is going to be doing Martian pull-ups and sit-ups. He's going to get jacked. Mm-hmm. He's going to start improvising weapons from the North Korean stuff. He's got that buried weapon. He will be the one man war on Mars.
Yeah.
You think this is a reckoning, Ed? I got the only pea shooter on this planet and I'm coming for blood.
It's true. Yeah, the gun does make me think that we need to revisit that timeline at least a little bit. Because otherwise, what is that? Is that just a marker of the nature of humanity on Mars? Like, we brought a fucking gun to Mars as, like, the first thing?
I mean, it's clearly Chekhov's gun. But
right, but now we're 10 years in the future, 8 years. If they jump back a couple, it's... I don't know.
Like I said in the other thing, I will believe that a gun you bury on Mars would be good for hundreds of years. Because it's not like there's rain.
No water, yeah.
There's not vast, huge temperature. Like if it's buried a foot underground, it's not going to be those huge temperature shifts. It's going to be very stable unless some asshole creates a landslide over it.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll see, Jared. I'm not going to be offended either way, as long as it's a cool story. That's all I care about. However, Jared, Jordan from Quebec agrees with you. Says, remember at the end of season two, the final shot is the boots on Mars. We've talked about this, yada, yada. Especially with how prominent the buried gun was, I really can't see them skipping over Danny's resolution. It's going to be extremely unsatisfying if Danny's fate is just suicide and part of a montage at the beginning of the season. Well, yeah. If he's just going to swing from the rafters or whatever. I also can't see them not wanting to do a scene where Danny finally admits to Ed that he was the other man. Since the show is already pretty soapy already... I can see Danny finding the gun, hijacking the rover, and having a final confrontation with Ed at gunpoint, probably leading to one of their deaths. I also can't see them yada yadaing the fallout of Ellen. Oh my God, I yada yadaed you in an email with yada yada. It's crazy. That's what the show does, though, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it has to yada yada over things with the time scope that we're talking about.
I don't know what they do with Danny because, like, I agree. It's a lot to just jump forward to 8 years. And what is he? Is he a homeless person on the streets? Has he killed himself? Has he got his life together and he's with his wife? Is he like, what is his story?
And like now they're the best buds. Like,
all right, I'm going to have a strong opinion. I don't give a shit. I don't care if Ed finds out that Danny fucked Karen. I really don't. And like, Ed's going to be so old next season that like, what's he going to do? He's going to get out of his wheelchair and break his hip.
Nah, he's injecting twice as much T testosterone into his ass.
He's getting old man swole. With his buns. Yeah, yeah.
What if Danny dies on Mars, Ed goes back to Earth, and Jimmy tells him? By the way, Ed, Danny was fucking your lady behind your back.
Yeah.
That's not satisfying either. But he's like the only other guy who... The only person who knows anything about it is Jimmy at this point.
No, Molly's husband knows, too.
Oh, you're right.
What's his name? That's not Gene... It's Wayne. He goes to visit Wayne and he's talking about how much he misses his wife. Of course, Wayne's much cooler, more awesome dead wife is in the background. He's like, you know what, Ed?
Yeah.
Danny fucked Karen there.
Or he sees a painting on the wall and he's like, oh, that's an interesting painting. What is this one about? I call this one Danny fucked Karen.
Yeah, it's an impressionist piece. I am deep in the goo, Ed. You're just bringing me down. You're harshing my buzz. Get the fuck out of here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, I don't think Danny's a villain, but I don't have a burning desire to see what's Ed. Because, yeah, what's Ed going to do? He's already put him in space prison, space isolation confinement. What are you, you going to turn him into a carpet stain? I don't know what the hell that even means. Seems like a messy cleanup. You'd have to get Shout involved. Jill says, Molly saved Woobo, not Wooby. The number of times y'all said Woobo wrong had me in tears. Well, I'm glad because Woobo, Wooby, I mean, you know, one name's not any more or less ridiculous from my very chauvinistic American perspective. It's not a real name like Billy or Teddy or Kitty. Like, that's a name. Wooby? Johnny? What the fuck? Woobo? Come on. All right, now, my real feedback is, wasn't the KERS system that they went to the North Korean ship for needed to dock with the Phoenix? By the time Danny and Lee get to Happy Valley, they've realized Kelly needs to go immediately and be ejected off the top of the MSAM, and won't they be docking? And they won't be docking, but Ed still asks for it to be installed. Why?
Huh.
That's actually a damn good question.
Especially if he's just going to crash the damn thing.
Is it because it's an automated docking, but also but Ed was actively flying that thing, I felt like. Man, yeah. I wish I'd had time to go back and watch the episode, because I wonder if we're mishearing something. Like, he was wanting something else installed, and it sounded like that. But, like, yeah, And they didn't install it into Kelly. What the hell does that even mean? Like, Kelly was manually piloting herself into the airlock, too. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer for you, unfortunately, Jill. JR says, I thought the final episode of For All Mankind Season 3 was great. It was incredible misdirected the death of Karen Baldwin, making her CO, then immediately killing her. Although I'm not sure about the Margo gets away plot. How did the Soviets keep her hidden for 8 years, or for that matter, why they wanted to save her in the first place? I guess the show is patterning her after a little after atomic bomb scientist spy Klaus Fuchs.
Wow.
That's hilarious. So the whole reason that you try to save your spies when they're burned is because you want people to be spies for you in the future. And if you're just an asshole to everyone that betrays their country or gives you secrets, that I think gets out. And why would anyone take the risk? Why everyone would just go to the CIA, go to the FBI? Like, what? Yeah, there's no upside, you know, unless you're extremely politically committed person, ideologically committed. And those people are very rare. Most people are in it for the money or the fame or whatever. If you have no ability to help them. That's one of the reasons why, honestly, the United States and Russia are so good, because as rich, powerful countries, they can do things that, like, you know, how many spies does, I don't know, Madagascar have? How many internationals, men and women of mystery does Madagascar?
You know, we don't know, but that might Ghana, just be an indication that they're damn good at it.
Or Laos. Yeah, it could be. Or it could be that they just, like, they don't have the resources to send people all over with microfilm and do shit. So... But that's the reason. That's the reason they would go to that effort, because she is a valuable asset. She probably still has a lot of information that they might be able to get out for her. But on the other hand, if the public story is she dies in an explosion, Huh. I still stand by, you know, the professional, the spy craft kind of depends on you giving a shit about protecting your agents.
Yeah,
makes sense. It's like there's been a lot of dumb takes in the last week about national security and top secret classifications and all that kind of stuff. But it's a reason you keep secrets. It's a reason you protect your sources. JR says, I do wish that the end montage had shown more characters. Was Bill killed? Where was Larry and Molly's husband? What happened to Jimmy? Was he arrested as an accomplice? What about Danny's reaction to learning Karen was dead? I do think that was evidence of the showrunners keeping their options open. You know, if they show a person alive, then that's a commitment. And maybe they want Bill to die, or maybe they want him to live. Maybe they're not so sure. And all this other fallout, like, yeah, I don't expect them to dot every I and cross every T, because that's what next season's for. And maybe they're not so sure. Do they want Jimmy rotten in prison? They want Jimmy to actually be seen as a hero who tried to alert people to the problem, and he just wasn't in time. Because there's, I think, a valid reading of that, right? It's not like Jimmy went in and did something on the day of. All he did was call Karen and said, my friends are acting weird. So,
yeah,
like,
I don't know that he ever planted the device they wanted to plant.
I don't think he did. I think Karen scared him off explicitly.
Yeah. And I think once you alert the authorities, you are explicitly not an accomplice.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, if I think they knew the whole story, he would still probably be charged with something. But I don't know if they ever will.
Yeah.
Although I also go ahead.
The stuff they did, I thought tied up all the plot threads that they had already set up. So I'm not like there was nothing with Bill that said like, I need to know what happened with Bill. Right. Like,
he's a git. Who gets him now?
The devil. The devil gets him. He's going to hell for sure. I don't know. I felt like they tied up all the things I wanted them to tie up, or left them open in ways that are interesting for the next season, to introduce everybody one after one. I guess I really didn't need that.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Here's a slightly negative take. Steve says, time to move for all mankind to the pulp feed. Turning a pregnant woman into a rocket, the North Korean Mars astronaut surviving, Ed walking away from that landing, Margo's disappearance covered by a bomb. It's a fun show, fellas, but it feels like it's moved firmly into pulp territory.
All of this stuff seems scientifically possible to me.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like pulp and prestige for us is more about ray guns and tentacle monsters and robots and less about the quality of a thing, you know? Maybe that's misleading.
In most cases, yeah.
Maybe that's one of the reasons that the prestige side of the house feels a little bit more rudderless than the pulp side right now. One of the reasons we put in prestige is just so we could do the show, because we usually have pulp running out of our damn noses and ears and all of our other orifices, where we're kind of, broadly speaking, been hurting for prestige stuff. You know, because a lot of the most prestigious stuff is coming out is science fiction fantasy nowadays.
Sure. The highest profile stuff, certainly.
Right. But anyway, I don't know. I know a lot of people said this is very soapy. There is still some people maintaining mm-hmm. there's a shark jump moment at the end of the season. I'm not one of those people. And if we brought it back, it probably would still be prestige. But we'll see. Because this is all... you know, some other people have asked us if we plan on coming back next season, and I will say the same thing I always do, or nearly always do, which is it depends. It really depends on where this comes back in the schedule, how busy we are. Because I will say that this was not a hit for us in terms of traffic, in terms of ads sold, in terms of sure. You know, and it seems like this is also a show that's struggling to find a fandom period, because you look at mm-hmm. its subreddit. It is a fraction of what you would expect from a high profile science fiction show. You know, you compare this.
I think
you
have to be a particular kind of nerd to enjoy this show. And I am that particular kind of nerd.
Yeah.
I'm not as steeped in like the NASA history and the science of all this stuff. But boy, the people who that flavor works for really love that flavor. But it's not the Marvel flavor. It's not the Lord of the Rings flavor, right? Those are fantasy. Those are pulp. And that's what the vast majority, when we're talking about the masses, like right now, the masses of nerds really love that stuff. This feels like a harder sell because it is more realistic.
Lonnie says, I agree with Jim. I felt like the last season finale was more gripping, but also this one did get me quite teary-eyed. Maybe I'm just getting old and sentimental, but this episode's familial themes really got to me. I also agreed with Aaron that the Korean on Mars threatened to derail the entire season. What I found I enjoy most about this show is that it takes events like the Soviets beating us to the moon and extrapolates that it could ultimately be a good thing for our nation. We continue to strive to be even better, united in the goal of reaching further out instead of being stunted, selfish, and afraid to fail. The reality, of course, is much different, and we've become a wreck of a nation that mirrors that of NASA and its rise and fall. Anyways, a great season, really great season 3 has made this one of my favorite shows currently, and I can't wait for your season four and your coverage.
It's interesting. Because one of the biggest things I'm looking forward to seeing the development of in season 4 is the Ellen arc, and not necessarily for Ellen, but for the world. I want to see, you know, where having a openly gay president takes America. That to me is super interesting.
Yeah, I agree. It's one thing that, you know, having this stuff come out of the closet on the show, I think is really interesting. As far as the nation being a wreck, I don't know. Like, we've been wrecked worse. We've been in tighter spots. I'm not even sure if we've been, this is the tightest spot we've been in the last 50 years. But, you know, people can change and grow. So can nations. You never know what's going to happen in the future. Hell, when I remember being a young adult in the early 2000s thinking right before 9/11, in fact, I was thinking, hot damn, we've done it. We fucking solved all the world's problems. It's just going to get better and better. What can possibly go wrong? And then 20 years happened. So
I was going to say, yeah, like
it really did seem.
We had an openly black president. I don't know how you can be in the closet black, but yeah, we had an openly black president, and that didn't seem to help the matter much. But even though everybody was declaring like this is the shift moment, it seems like there's a lot of backlash. So I can see the same thing happening with Ellen.
Yeah, that it is a big step forward, but the reaction, the knee jerk reaction to it is a temporary setback and then an overcorrection before the pendulum finally swings back even harder to the other way, which is, I think, in a good place. If I've got my pendulum swings right. So I don't know. I'm not giving up hope just yet. But I agree. Like I'd like that too. Like what does these differences, how does it make things better? How do they make things worse? How do things stay the same? I think it's really interesting storytelling. Scott says, regarding the Molly Cobb Space Center, I think the other reason there's an explosion to take out the JSC is more meta. I imagine the creators like a new mission control set. If there's no explosion, any changes to that room are kind of cosmetic and will always have the historical vibe to it. Now they can really update it. I think it'll be like the Star Trek original series bridge. We all loved it, but it was stuck in the 60s. And look at the Enterprise D bridge now. That's a good take, because Jack and I, when we were watching the finale, he was actually joking about, like, look at all, like, they've got modern computers and they're sitting in these giant 1960s cabinets, you know, with the ashtrays built into them. And I think it looks like that down to this day, because who the fuck is going to change it? This does allow them to kind of clean slate Helios, this stuff, right?
Yeah. Do we see much of Helios's mission control? Or is that just so automated that it doesn't even matter?
No, we did. It looked like a college classroom version of the Johnson Space Center.
Yeah,
it was
like
very dark.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was very mood, you know, like very, very developer office lighting, you know, low lighting. But yeah, I'm very curious to see what they come back with a brand new design. Norm says, Hi, Bob. What a great episode. I was about out when Danny was allowed to be high on the job and killed all those people back in episode 7, but they pulled me back in with the last few episodes, culminating with the finale. The way Ed said reckoning to Danny and then his magic hat Korean calling Lee Little Dumpling, just so many awesome variations in the same character in one episode.
Yeah.
It wasn't a perfect season, though highly enjoyable overall. But am I horrible wishing they just killed off Margo and plucked that thread? Seems like her being in Russia adds to a complexity to the next season that is unnecessary. Is Elaida somehow going to figure out she's alive and maneuver her back to the U.S.? Is Margo collaborating with the Russians? I don't buy either. Regardless, I'm looking forward to starting back with Apple TV Plus when it comes back. I think Margo, like, that's one of the things I think has been not lacking, but definitely noticeable, the lack of a Soviet perspective, a true, like, we have Sergei.
Yeah.
But he seems essentially like an American with a bad Russian accent. He doesn't really like the way things are doing. He's an atypical Soviet. So I would like, I am going to enjoy seeing a little bit more on the Moscow side of things from Margo's perspective.
As a window into that world, I think it's a good decision to keep her around. I don't know what, and we've talked about this, you know, I don't know what her function there is going to be. And it does seem like it has the potential to not be super interesting, but hopefully they can make something of it.
I really got the impression from seeing her routine, her feet hitting the floor and her open the drapes, that she is like, it felt to me like she's doing the exact same stuff she did in America. So I guess I am assuming she's part of their space program and she is collaborating with them, but I don't know that she sees it that way. Because she's already given the fusion technology, and it's not like she's, I doubt she has anything in her head about nuclear bombs or whatnot. And, you know, her information is not going to get any fresher. So I think her only thing is just to be, you know, a brilliant space oriented administrator, and she can help the Russians out in that aspect. But will they let her? I think it's interesting how she'll square all that. Josh in Maine says, this is the last email we've got, by the way. So that North Korean capsule probe has an airlock, obviously. So the cabin's never exposed to Martian atmosphere. Dane's going to be in there for 10 minutes before he digs up that gun and puts a bullet in his brain. Can you imagine the funk from 5 to 6 months of humans eating canned fish accompanied by what I can only imagine are god-awful farts produced from said fish? Not to mention the empty cans and the fact that someone's been pissing and shitting in an area the size of a 727 cockpit. Oh yeah, I almost forgot the months on end where the cabin is occupied by two people eating fish and hotboxing it all the way to Mars. Dane's going to hit one, going to take one whiff and wondered what died in here. Well, it's the other astronaut, Danny, but that's not what you're smelling. I got to say, the whole time that dude was eating and just throwing the cans on the ground, I'm like, what in the name of an 8-year-old is going on here? Like, do you not have trash bags? Can you not bury them out in Mars? Is there some kind of...
Oh, you can't put them on the surface. That'll contaminate Mars. You can't do that.
What?
But sure, bags, seal them up. Yeah.
You can't put stuff on the surface of Mars? They're not irradiating their boots every time they go outside, or like dry cleaning their suits or all the equipment. Like, this is not a... That's why Kelly was so worried about them drilling into the water table, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, she doesn't want them to contaminate it, but I assumed there would be concerns about that. But
they at least got to put it in a bag, because like, yeah, that shit must reek. It's got to reek like a garbage dump inside there.
Yeah, there's no shower out there either. I mean, he's going to be out there for a month without bathing. He's going to stink.
Yeah, I feel like I would open that thing out to quote unquote air it out, and when I mean air it out, I mean vacuum it out so that like all the bacteria and stuff die. Mm-hmm. Do that once a week to kind of just keep the smell down to a dull roar.
At some point, do you run out of oxygen doing that?
Well, I mean, I guess NASA would have to supply you, right?
Yeah,
it's cruel than usual, the facility that they're keeping him. This is
this is a reckoning for sure.
He's still an American citizen, damn it. He has rights. Anyway, that's that whimsical note is how we'll end For All Mankind. Really appreciate everybody who has been a listener. Again, we didn't have a huge audience, unfortunately. I don't think the show has a huge audience, but we have experienced cases in the past where we cover a small niche show and we do it well, and we become a very big fish in a very small pond. I remember I was kind of shocked the first season or so of The Expanse. That actually ended up pretty well for us. Leftovers was always a small show, but we got huge being like the go-to Leftovers podcast for that thing. So I think it's a statistic that sticks out in my mind that like, one out of every 10 people watching The Leftovers listen to our podcast.
Yeah, wild.
There was an average 1 million weekly list of viewers and 100,000 weekly following The Leftovers listeners. I thought that was like, that's got to be a record in terms of like market penetration. So I don't know if word gets out that we're doing a good job. I know there's a lot of other people that are covering this show as well. The NASA snack machine guys, there's a couple of the official podcasts, of course, with Chris Marshall hosting it. So there's a lot of competition, but I do love the show. And if the schedule permits and our time permit, I would like to come back to it. But we'll see. We'll see what season 4 has in store for us. We've got a lot of other shows on Apple TV that we want to cover. We got season 1 of Foundation in the books. We're looking forward to that coming back in 2023, I hear, early to mid 2023. I would love to give coverage to Severance. If you're an Apple TV Plus fan, we got pretty good coverage of that on our premium Off the Clock podcast. And then coming up, we got House of the Dragon on HBO going head to head with Amazon TV's Rings of Power, the Lord of the Rings vehicle. There's lots of great Bald Move coverage. We're going to get back to The Walking Dead. We're going to finally put a stake in that goddamn show's heart. at the end of the 11th season. I'm pleased to talk about that. So there's lots of stuff going on at baldmove.com. If you're looking for something to watch, there's a couple options if you want to follow us to those pastures. Thank you. Thank you very much for listening. Really appreciate everybody shouting us out on Reddit and on social media. We got quite a bit of that this season. Keep that up and we'll see. We'll keep our ears to the ground to see what comes of season four. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, Bob.